south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander.
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started.
You're going to like this email from Mr. JL. He says, Johnny, I was laying back, sipping quarantinis, and listening to your latest podcast, when a few key words triggered my memory. Now, I have a good boots-on-the-ground story that just might restore your faith in Mexico. The trigger words you said that got me were Latin American, driver's license, and residency. The question is, Johnny, can you get a driver's license without having residency in a particular Latin country? As in, while visiting on a tourist visa, can you get a license? The answer is, unlikely as it sounds, you bet. As I found out when these two gringos from Maine rented a house in the neighborhood from January through March. Of course, they were invited to all the drinking parties, so we hung out a bit. At one of them mused, you know, wouldn't it be nice to have a local ID or driver's license to show the cops when they try to hit you for a bribe or mordida? With that, we asked our neighborhood lawyer, who the entire neighborhood turns to when in doubt about some legal question. And the lawyer, he said surprisingly enough, you've come to the land of endless possibilities. Now, if you have a couple of hours and 4,200 pesos, in the case of a driver's license, anything's possible. And here's how it went. And I'll keep it short so you can paraphrase, as only you know how to do, Johnny. Step number one. A fixer takes you to the health check office, a hole in the wall, where you pass the health exam. Of course, you pass whether you're healthy or not. They take your weight, height, ask a few questions, and do an eye test. You read the letters on the wall, etc. You pass that one, too, whether you can see the chart or not. Then, after you have jumped those hurdles and passed with flying colors, you go to the state issuing office, where the clerk takes your picture. A digital index fingerprint scan, too. Then, he invents a fictitious CURP number. That's a unique national ID code in Mexico. And that's it. The end. True to the lawyer's word, the entire process takes about 2 hours, and you walk away with a legit Mexican driver's license issued by the state government office, valid for 5 years. With the icing on the cake, you don't even have to surrender your Gringoland issued license, which is otherwise a requirement when you go through the process normally. Oh, and what about the address that has to go along with that ID? Why, you just give him your rented Airbnb address, naturally. Or anyone you want. Then he says, as I recall about the incident, Johnny, I had too many quarantinis that day to swear by it now, but the breakdown of the cost was around 1,400 pesos for the license, 1,400 pesos for the fixer, for a total of 4,200 pesos, around $200. So you see, Johnny, perhaps not all is as bad as they say about Mexico. Anyway, so long for now, and thanks for keeping us informed and entertained. I only wish you would do your podcast 3 times a week, not just 2. Signed, Mr. J.L. in the Mexican Altiplano. All right, great boots on the ground story there, but I've got something to add. Actually, a couple of things to add. It's a fact. No matter where you are in Latin America or which country you're in, if you're at a party or a gringo bar or even a Latino bar and you speak a little Spanish, or even if you're just sitting in your lawyer's office, if you bring up the fact that you'd like to get a local driver's license, and you're not a resident, which is one of the prerequisites, I guarantee you within a couple of days or even a couple of hours or minutes, someone's going to say, I know a guy who knows a guy. In fact, I guarantee you right now I could go to any medium or large-sized Latin city, walk down to the business area, which is usually right next to where all the government buildings are. You can't miss the government buildings. They're all alike, with all kinds of statues and busts of genocidal dictators with oversized heads. I know, it's crazy, but it's true. The only saving grace and karma being that they're all covered in bird poop. By the way, one of the first things that struck me as odd about Latin America is when I first came down, I noticed that every single government building, lobby, garden, or park had a bronze statue or two of a genocidal dictator, slightly larger than life, owing to the fact that basically they were all a bunch of little turds with Napoleon complexes. Oh, and their heads were always disproportionately larger than their bodies. In other words, in real life, if you saw one of these guys walking down the street or on a horse in battle, that's one of the usual suspect themes for statues down here, you'd probably feel sorry for the guy because you'd be thinking, not only was he born a midget, he's got water on the brain too. Though I guess that's what it takes to be a successful politician these days. That, along with a touch of obesity. But I digress as usual. Anyway, if you're looking for a fast-track driver's license or even a national ID card, meaning you want to bypass all the legal steps and you want it now, you just go down to the area where the government buildings are. You walk up to one of the little makeshift kiosks on the street. They offer photocopies, passport photos, and such. I guarantee if you walk up to one of those kiosks, even if your Spanish completely sucks, just ask for a tramitador. Tramitador, that's expediter. Within a few minutes, you'll have a couple of smooth-talking guys vying for your business. Of course, you'll have to tell them what you want. You're looking for a driver's license. Now, in the case of Mr. J.L., and the fact that his, quote, expediter or tramitador walked him down to the state driver's license issuing office, and the clerk in the office took his picture and digital index finger impression, well, that should be proof that the license is actually 100% real, except for the fact that those guys at the driver's testing station don't always perform all the steps when entering it into the system. Of course, they want your dough. They want to make money on the side, but they don't want to get caught either, in case you stumble and the trail leads back to them. In other words, they know which steps to admit. For example, every driver's license in Latin America has the person's cédula or national ID number on it. And if you're not a resident, you won't have one, but they'll have to put one down because there's a space for it. So then what happens if you get in an accident or pulled over, you pull that driver's license out, and the cop asks for your cédula or national ID, because if you're a resident, you're supposed to have it on you at all times. And cops, as dumb as they are, they know. The number on your cédula will match your driver's license. What do you do then? Well, if $100 won't get you out of that mess, call your lawyer, of course. What? You say you don't have a lawyer? Well, boy, you in a heap of trouble. So the fact is, many hundreds, maybe thousands of quasi-legal licenses like that exist. And you'll really never know if they're officially registered completely or not. That is, until you get pulled over or get into an accident. However, there is a sneaky way to check. You download one of those barcode scanning apps, scan your license, and see what comes up. Then you have to scan the barcode of someone with a legit Mexican license and compare it against your scan. That's to see if all the pertinent information pops up and there are no blank spaces. Because, you know, most of the cops in Mexico these days, especially in the tourist districts, have scanners in their patrol cars. And if it doesn't pass, you better start digging out some bribe money. Now, you know, my buddy expat Eddie has had some of those same problems. His U.S. driver's license expired over 10 years ago, and it's so ratty, you wouldn't want to even touch it. It's moldy and falling apart. But you see, he's not worried. Now, what I'm about to tell you is not exactly legal, and I'm not telling you to go out and do it. I'm not recommending it. But I'm just telling you, once again, what lots of expats do, lots of smart expats, especially if they can't get things done legally any other way because they're not residents. And some of them, like expat Eddie, did some stupid things when they were adolescents. Nothing serious, but enough to get a little police record. And to get residency, you have to submit an absolutely clean police record. So then how does Eddie drive? Well, he's got a number of Latin American driver's licenses obtained on the gray market, as mentioned. I know for sure he's got a license from Costa Rica, Mexico, Panama, and El Salvador. But he lives most of the time in San Salvador. That's the capital of El Salvador. And if and when he's pulled over at a roadblock where he lives, he never gives his El Salvador license to the cops. He gives him one from Costa Rica, Panama, or Mexico. But you see, cops in one Latin country have absolutely no access to the databases of other Latin countries. Therefore, when he hands his license over to a cop and they look at it, it's a dead end. And they just hand it right back. And that's it. Game over. Case closed. Oh, and if for some reason the cops balk and don't like that particular license, he pulls out another one just to reinforce the fact that he's a world traveler. Again, this is for informational purposes only. I've seen Eddie do it, and though I'm not recommending it, I'm just giving you a few examples on how expats manage things here. Oh, and there's another thing that ties into this. Suppose you're in Mexico and you've got one of those instant driver's licenses that Mr. JL was talking about, and you get in a car accident. Well, unless it's a tiny fender bender that you resolve right there. If the cops come and the insurance companies are called in, etc., the insurance company especially is going to dig deep into that license because they know if something's fishy, it's not registered properly, whatever, the irregularity would violate the conditions of the contract. You know, insurance companies, they're always looking for an out. And they won't have to pay. They won't cover your damages. However, if you have a driver's license from another country, if it appears to be valid, that's the end of the conversation, end of discussion, too. It would be almost impossible for them to check on it. So anyway, bottom line, JL, is that the Mexican lawyer was right. It's the land of possibilities, especially if you've got dough. But that's not just true for Mexico. Every Latin American country is the same. In fact, here in Latin America, there are so many fake but nicely done driver's licenses, and the cops know that. In most countries, if you're stopped by the cops and don't have any license on you whatsoever, or you're driving on an expired license, they just hit you with a nominal $50, $100, or $200 fine and send you on your way. Yep, they let you drive off. Doesn't make sense, I know, but hey, this is Latin America. Though, of course, smart gringos and expats will often ask if they can pay the fine right now. That's exactly what most Latino cops are waiting to hear. In that case, they won't hand you a ticket at all, because then there would be a record of it. But believe me, from then on, they'll be your best friends, at least till you hit the road and you're out of there. So my advice, weigh your options, but be careful. All right, now let's talk about something that's really surreal to me anyway. You know, just like in Washington, D.C., there are always protesters in front of the White House and the Capitol building, the Supreme Court, etc. Every day of the week, you'll find people with signs protesting about something. Well, same thing goes for down here in Latin America. Every capital city where they've got the government buildings, you've got protesters every single day protesting about something or another. But now, just in the last week, since this George Floyd thing, I'm seeing on the nightly news here in Latin America, you know, the Spanish language stations you guys never listen to. All of a sudden, for example, marchers that are always carrying signs accusing the Ecuadorian government of racism and drug violence on their Colombian border in the northern Esmeralda province. Suddenly, signs are propping up there protesting the death of George Floyd. We're talking about the Ecuador-Colombian border where no one even knows how to pronounce his name. Nor, if you asked any one of the protesters, could they tell you what city, even state, where it occurred or what really happened. Then you've got groups in Guayaquil and Quito, Ecuador, staging protests against police brutality and racism, with George Floyd signs leading the way. Then you've got thousands protesting outside the U.S. Embassy in Mexico City, with signs saying things like, racism kills, with many of those signs in English. Meanwhile, if you're an observer in Mexico, you can see that Mexican Latinos harbor extreme racism and classism against the indigenous population. Then, in Rio de Janeiro, Brazil, you've got hundreds of people standing outside the Guanabara Palace, the headquarters of the state government, carrying signs attacking the president, Bolsonaro, as well as signs with people supporting justice for, guess who? George Floyd. Again, we're talking about people that don't even know how to pronounce his name, who couldn't find Minnesota on a map of the U.S., It's happening in Buenos Aires, Argentina, Lima, Peru, Montevideo, Uruguay, and Bogota, with no one, and I mean no one, keeping up any kind of social distancing at all. You know, if I was a space alien looking at the news footage, I'd think the humans had found a cure to the coronavirus, i.e. mass protests. Though it seems social distancing is not an issue on the streets, masks certainly are. That's one way to avoid being spotted on camera while looting. So then what's to make of all this? Well, as I'm sitting here flicking through the channels, looking at Latin American 6 o'clock news reports, they're showing all the protests and looting up by you, whereas down here anyway, there doesn't seem to be any kind of looting going on in the name of so-called justice for George Floyd. But, and this is key and no one's reporting on it, what I'm seeing with these brand new signs that are popping up saying justice for George Floyd, well, the movement does not seem to be organic at all, but orchestrated by guess who? Gringos and expats. And how can you tell? Well, look up close. Who's carrying the George Floyd signs on the front lines? You'll always find a couple of tall, white, non-Latinos. Plus, they're the ones that seem to be the most artistic and have the nicest lettering on the English signs. Yep, we expats have great organizational skills. And to be perfectly politically incorrect here, and it seems like if you're white and you give an opinion on the subject, you'll inevitably be called a racist. It's only a matter of time. Now, here's what I don't get, and go ahead and crucify me, I don't care. With every protest, there's a number of Black Lives Matter signs. Apparently, people seem to forget about cities like Chicago, where I come from. Just looked it up. Last weekend, Chicago had the highest numbers of murders in its history. And most of those murders, blacks killing blacks. Quote, "We've never seen anything like it at all," said Max Kapustin, senior research director at the University of Chicago Crime Lab. Turns out from Friday, May 29th through Sunday, May 31st, 25 people were killed in the city with another 85 wounded by gunfire. Most of it, again, black-on-black crime. That, according to data maintained by the Chicago Sun-Times. A senior spokesman from the University of Chicago Crime Lab says, "We don't even know how to put it into context. It's beyond anything we've ever seen before." Then he says, on May 31st alone, Chicago's 911 Emergency Service Center received 65,000 calls. That's 50,000 more than a usual day. That's more than a 300% increase in panic callers. Man, talk about big U.S. cities being time bombs. So how's that Plan B coming? Most people, you know, I'd say about 98% of people up by you, don't even have a Plan B. You know, that 911 data should be a very strong wake-up call to you. Think about it. Up in the States, as soon as some uncontrolled situation happens in the house or the neighborhood, the first thing you do is dial 911, right? Well, you better start rethinking that logic. Oh, and you know what's a great business to be in right now? I was just talking to one of my friends in Chicago whose family owns a chain of hardware stores. My high school buddy Dave, yeah, again with the Daves, right? He tells me there's an unprecedented rise in orders for razor wire and barbed wire. Now, you might think I'm bringing this up because it's kind of obvious. People are reacting to the panic and they want to protect themselves. But you know what? It kind of makes me laugh in a sort of sardonic way. Seems like every time a fresh, newer green gringo comes down here for the very first time, one of the first things they comment on is how much barbed wire and razor wire they see strung around businesses and residential areas. They always make some kind of comment. Man, it must be really dangerous down here. Sometimes followed by something like, thank God, we don't have to deal with that kind of insecurity up in the good old U.S. of A. Well, well, well. My, how things change, and in a hurry, too. Not to mention the fact that up in the States, gun stores are not only running out of guns and ammo, they're weeks and weeks behind on orders. Turns out that millions of Americans who were all on board for banning guns just a couple of years back when Obama was in office, well, they're sort of eating their words right now, aren't they? Yep, all of us are hypocrites at one time or another, huh? And we don't like to hear facts when they go contrary to our beliefs. Like, for example, according to FBI statistics, for every 10,000 black people arrested for a violent crime, 3 are killed by police. For every 10,000 white people arrested for a violent crime, 4 are killed by police. And how about this FBI fact? In 2019, 49 unarmed people were killed by the police. 9 were black, 19 were white. And of course, everyone's outraged by the video with the cops killing George Floyd. That's terrible. Beyond inexcusable. Meanwhile, on that same Memorial Day weekend, Chicago witnessed another deadly weekend of inner-city black-on-black gang-related violence with over 30 people getting shot. But no one likes to talk about that. You know, it seems to me, according to the lamestream media anyway, black lives only matter if it's white people perpetrating the abuses. By the way, 20% of the police force in the United States is black, you know. Meanwhile, you've got idiots like Jesse Jack leading the march as usual in Chicago. However, the media never goes after him or his family, even though they're a bunch of low-life crooks and scoundrels. But foreign media outlets, they don't care. They don't have to kiss up to him. For example, Great Britain's Daily Mail reports that Chicago millionaire and brother of Jesse Jackson was sentenced to the maximum of 10 years in prison after being convicted of a felony with the attempted murder of a woman who witnessed another slaying in which he was involved. You know, I'm absolutely sure this is the first time you've ever heard that story. But you never see that stuff reported in the lamestream news. Then you've got the fact that Jesse Jackson Jr., his son, collects $138,000 a year in federal government benefits after serving 2.5 years in prison for looting his own congressional campaign. His reasoning? He got his doctors to say his bipolar disorder and depression stops him from being able to work. Oh, what a tragedy. Like being in Congress is actually work. He claims that being a congressman led to his bipolar disorder, and he developed the illness while on the job as a congressman. What a family of scam artists. Meanwhile, he gets $138,000 a year in workers' compensation and disability checks. And this guy's a felon, an ex-con, an ex-congressman. Man, the system is so screwed up, I don't know where to begin. So then, what does this have to do with Latin America, you might ask? It's all about building an airtight case for getting the hell out of Dodge. If you aren't convinced and you're not seeing it by now, maybe you do deserve to go down with the Titanic. There'll come a time, you know, and very soon, when a bug-out bag to the boonies just won't cut it. Oh, and one more thing. You know, there's a huge drive throughout the states to defund police departments. That's building up steam by the minute. Man, the power of Twitter is unbelievable. It seems to be a forum for mob rule, huh? Though perhaps the most serious question of all is, what's going to happen to Chicago, L.A., Detroit, etc., when they defund your police departments? I'm sure all the gangbangers, narcos, and no goodnecks are going to find Jesus, don't you think? Well, you got three choices. You trust in your government and dial 911 when the shit hits the fan. Or number two, you hunker down and buy more guns and ammo. And a lot more razor wire if you can get it. Though if you're smart, you'll pick number three. That's a plan B to get the hell out of Dodge. And of course, you know the best way to get your plan B turbocharged and on steroids is to come to my expat insider seminar. The next one, which just might be my last, depending on circumstances. We'll kick off Friday, August 21st, and finish on Thursday night, August 27th. For info and sign-up details, just go to expatplanb.com. Then click on the seminar link to get in on the early bird discounts. Oh, and as of today's show that goes out on June 12th, I'm still looking for a lady who wants to share double occupancy and save $750 off the price of a single. If you're interested in saving that kind of dough and rooming up with someone, same gender, of course, another lady, send me an email to expatfiles@gmail.com. Speaking of bugging out to the boonies and being self-sufficient, we got this email that just came in from Scott. He says, "Hey, Johnny, I just listened to an episode of yours from May 29th. I took some notes on it and some of the solar systems you mentioned, the Titan system, the Power Oak, and Best Sun. Could you please send me your file with the information on all this stuff and your recommendations for solar power? Also, I'd like to ask what the difference is between Best Sun, Powerwall, and the other two. As for me, I'm interested in powering a cabin in eastern Peru. How can I get systems like that down here in Peru? How much would shipping and customs be, do you think? Could you put them in your suitcase and just fly down? Thanks again, Johnny." All right, Scott, a lot of good questions there. Let me see if I can kind of condense this. First of all, you know, we divide solar systems into portable and permanent. That is, a portable system, you could just pick it up, toss it in your car, along with the panels and the power unit, and go anywhere you want. And then in maybe 20 minutes, it's producing power. And then you've got your permanent off-the-grid system, which is too big and heavy to move, with the lithium battery part called the power wall, way too heavy for one person to move. It's at least 200 pounds. And the solar panels are big ones too, and they're usually bolted to your roof, so you don't want to move those either. Let's talk about portable first. I recommend a portable unit that has two suitcase portable solar panels. They each fold in half, so you can carry them easily. There's four sections of 100 watts each. That means you've got 400 watts of panel. And those portable panels I'm talking about actually do fold together and have handles on them. You can just pick them right up and toss them in your car or your trunk. And Scott, I'll send you the details on the panels I recommend. Now, the two portable systems I recommend are either a Power Oak or a Titan. The Titan being my number one pick, but it's twice as expensive as the Power Oak for the same amount of power, that is, wattage it stores and puts out. Now, the great thing about the Titan is that it's built like a tank. And if you get just the basic unit, which is a 2-kilowatt unit, 2,000 watts of storage in the lithium batteries, it only weighs about 30 pounds, like the Power Oak does. Now, the real advantage to the Titan is this. You could buy extra batteries and add 2,000 watts each battery. You stack them right on top of each other. They automatically connect. And for example, if you buy an extra, let's say, four batteries, that's 8,000 watts plus the original two in the main unit. That's 10,000 watts. That's equal to a power wall, a Tesla power wall. So you can actually turn a portable Titan unit into a permanent installation, and it'll be everything you'll ever need. In other words, you could have it both ways. It can be a permanent and a temporary setup. But of course, if you're going permanent with the Titan system, you'll have to add three full-size solar panels for each battery section. But you can also break it down in about 15 minutes and make it a portable system that you can throw in your trunk. So you'll want to buy some foldable suitcase solar panels with that one, too. It's all explained in the material I'm going to send you, Scott. I'll send you pictures, diagrams, and even the manuals for those units. Now, as far as a permanent installation, we talk about power walls. That's the original concept of Tesla, the Tesla power wall. It's a battery pack about a half a foot thick and as big as a large suitcase. It has all the electronics in it too, and it weighs about 200 pounds. It can store and put out about 10 to 12 kilowatts. That's 10,000 to 12,000 watts. So during the day, your solar panels will charge it and run your appliances. And at night, you're running off the battery pack. It's all automatic, of course. You don't have to worry about flipping any switches. You never even notice when the unit switches from solar panels to battery. Now, the term power wall is a generic term for a big battery pack that came out first from Tesla. And to get one of those and have it installed is around 10 grand. And naturally, since the guts of all the Tesla power walls is made in China, Chinese companies have now started cloning them, almost exactly. And as it turns out, just last January, about 6 months ago, a company called Best Sun has come out with an excellent and reliable copy of the Tesla Powerwall for less than half that price, somewhere around 4 grand. Now, of course, if you've got tons of dough, you could get the Tesla people to install a Powerwall. But who doesn't want to save 4 or 5 grand on their system? And really, down here in Latin America, all you will need is one of those Powerwalls and around 12 solar panels. I always recommend you get a panel that's put out at least 300 to 400 watts. And down here, if you go on OLX.com, as mentioned, it'll cost you around $100 a panel. You'll need 12 minimum, but you could go up to around 18. More panels are better to a point, but more than 18 panels is money wasted, because then you'll be producing excess power that'll never get stored or used. So down here for a permanent installation, you'll need one power wall and let's say 12 panels. And if you're going to have an electric car and run air conditioning, you'll get another power wall, a duplicate system, which will be set up for 220 volts, because 90% of AC units run on 220, and all the most efficient electric car charge stations use 220 volts too. But that's no problem. When you order a power wall, you tell them either you want it in 110 volts or 220. So then what about taxes and shipping? Well, if you buy one of those Best Sun units, you can get it from Amazon and they'll ship it down. Or you can order them direct from the factory in China and they'll ship them direct to you too. They'll ship by boat. It takes about a month. It'll come on a pallet. And the shipping costs anywhere from $500 to $1,000. Remember, it's very heavy. And depending where you are in Latin America, your taxes will be anywhere from 10 to 30%. But the nice thing is, no matter if you get it from Amazon or the factory in China, they'll arrange the shipping right to your door. Oh, and you better be ready when it gets there, because you don't want to go moving that thing again. And as for the panels, you can order them from Amazon or the factory too, but I recommend you get them in your own country on OLX.com. They'll be a hell of a lot cheaper. You won't pay any taxes or shipping either, because they're already in country. Now, of course, I'm talking about the panels you're going to use for your permanent solar system. When talking about the solar panels you're going to use for your portable system, the so-called suitcase solar panels, your best bet is either to order those from Amazon or go direct to the factory in China via Alibaba. Why? Because it's very unlikely you're going to be able to find the latest and greatest suitcase solar panels on OLX.com. I check all the time and people are holding on to them. They don't sell them. South of the border. You've been listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America. If you need some help with your own Plan B, we can schedule a one-on-one phone or Skype consult. Just send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And if you want to get on the waiting list for my next week-long Expat Insider Seminar in Central America, where you're guaranteed to get a 2 to 5 year head start on your Plan B, send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. Nos vemos.